call the. Is the mic on here?
Yeah.
Okay. We call a meeting to order, members. Welcome. Welcome, committee hearing. I was traveling around the state for some higher education visits. I started to hear a few questions about the use of the stimulus money, so I thought I'd bring the commissioner here to tell us how the federal stimulus money is being used. But I also, members, do want to tell you that I have had quite a few problems with the unemployment insurance system up in my district because of I would assume glitches in the computer system, which I have always questioned a computer having compassion for some of these folks that have lost their jobs. And I have to say that Mr. Lee Nelson has been helpful in assigning a person, particularly for U.S. Steel's Mintec plant. And I think the problem deals with the fact that people are being forced to take vacation and the computer system kicks them out because of it. So I wanted to get some folks that have come down from the Iron Range where we are experiencing 18.5% unemployment in the Hibbing Workforce Office and 17.5% in the Virginia Office, and I think 13.5% at the Grand Rapids Office. And now my understanding is that at TSAC, which is the old National Steel plant, the same problem is occurring. So I don't know, Mr. Wetzel, you've heard some of these complaints. If you want to come up first and then bring a few of the steel workers, and I know there's folks here from the building trades also that want to talk, and anybody else in the audience that might have run into some of these problems. So just state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Brad Letzo, Chief of Staff of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and appreciate the opportunity, and I'll keep my comments very brief because there are people here that can talk specifically about the problems happening. But we do appreciate the committee examining the issues of unemployment, compensation, dedicated worker funding, and retraining programs. I wish we could be talking about that much less and instead discussing job growth, but that isn't, as you mentioned, the case right now. I'm sure it's no shock to anyone in the room. We saw the union members and other workers here that unemployment rates, as you mentioned, are exceptionally high and more in other areas of the state than or some areas than others. But the real story, rather than the rates, are the workers and their families struggling to make ends meet in this economy. There have been problems with some determinations on unemployment benefits and getting dedicated worker funding, which you'll hear. And unfortunately, the union members here have first-hand experience with these problems. And I do want to highlight two points that seem to rise over and over, but shouldn't really be a factor. First, when employers are very cooperative with the workers concerning both unemployment and duplicated worker funding, everything runs pretty smoothly, especially when the employer anticipates a major layoff and notifies and works with the workers on options such as the WARN notice, the 60-day notice, unemployment insurance, and duplicated worker funding, and actually have people come in and explain these things to the workers. As long as they're working, actually, they're very appreciative, and actually productivity, actually, generally, the studies show increases. Unfortunately, employers have put roadblocks in these situations will lead to pain and confusion for everybody involved, the community, the state, and most importantly, the workers and their families. The second problem is seems to be the termination of unemployment benefits for a large number of workers laid off at once. In substantially the same situation should be receiving approximately the same determination from the department, we think. And it shouldn't make any difference who you talk to, but rather the situation of the layoff. This doesn't always seem to be the case. Now, part of that issue may be the huge workload right now, but we'd like to have that kind of looked at or have people talk about. But the strain on the system with the unemployment system and the duplicated worker provider you'll hear about too. But one thing I just want to kind of alert members on, I think, is that If funds start becoming depleted this fall and by the end of the year on the Just Kid to Worker funding, and I know you did provide more funding last year, but the strain on the system, I think you're probably going to be getting more and more telephone calls and emails and letters is my guess, just to give you a heads up on that. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But anyways, I'll be happy to answer any questions. I thank you for your time. But, you know, and I'll be around to answer questions too, but perhaps making sure the workers get in.
Any questions, Mr. Lessel? Thank you very much. I don't know who's coming up from TTAC. Come on up and identify yourself for the tape, and maybe you can tell the committee and the folks from Deed what's going on up there. Welcome. Just give your name for the tape.
My name is Jack Bronson, union president for the local at TTAC. And our main problem is people take a week's vacation and report it to the unemployment office, and they receive a statement from them that they have pending issues, and they do not receive any unemployment for up to 6 weeks before the issues straighten out. We believe that you can have an issue for 1 week, but they shouldn't be penalized for 4 to 5, 6 weeks with no unemployment, especially when they have to feed their families on unemployment. That's our main issue there. And I've called on the state, talked to this Jennifer Fuhr and this Ruth Olson. Those two have been helping me out a lot when I have problems.
Your members, tell us, Jack, you had a total plant shutdown.
Yes.
And now, did you have any problems initially, or is it because, you should probably explain to the committee, my understanding is these are forced to take vacation, and then did the problem arise then, or was the problem there from the beginning as far as...
From the beginning when they're on vacation. No one's going to be forced on vacation until September 6th, then everyone's going to be having their vacation time taken away from them.
And so when the vacation shows up, do people go to the... workforce center in Hibbing or Grand Rapids or Virginia, wherever they live, and try to get help? And are
yes.
they helped individually?
I've been told by some of them, yes, and some of them tell them you have to use the computer or use the phone, and people are getting frustrated by going through the answer machine, waiting. Sometimes they don't get return phone calls for a day afterwards when they leave a message.
How big is the problem at TTAC as far as this?
We have 313 people that are laid off, and every week I get calls from someone on this issue where they are not getting any unemployment.
When we get someone from Deed up here, I think we'll get an explanation as to U.S. Steel kind of... maybe not getting enough information to them too, and like I said, I will say that Mr. Lee Nelson assigned a person to U.S. Steel at the Mintac plant. Did you get this name of these two folks that you mentioned, and did someone from Deed or did someone from your partners at Mintac help you to kind of try to streamline the process?
I've been talking to Tom Anzalt for a couple weeks, or I should say probably for 2 months now on this issue, and he gave me names to call, and that's who I've been dealing with, and they've been really helpful when I called on the state, that Ruth and Jennifer.
But the problem continues.
Yep. And they tell me the main problem is U.S. Steel is one of the holdups.
Well, when we get to... folks from Deed up here, we'll see what's happening as far as that computer system, but anything else, any questions from the members at all? Okay, thank you then, Mr. Johnson, for your input. Sir Harry, you want to come up and identify yourself on the tape, please?
Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Harry Melander. I work for the Minnesota State Building Trades Council as their president.
Congratulations, by the way.
Maybe.
And our certificate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you're well aware of some of the challenges that our members have had in the past. You were very, very helpful with participating and engaging staff members in some of the challenges that our unemployed members had. For the committee, for those of you that are not aware, but I'm sure that you are, employment in our industry in some cases exceeds 30%. So our members are using the unemployment benefit more than they would like to and more than we've seen probably see for a couple of decades. As I had said earlier, probably about a year and a half ago, our members were having great challenges in filing claims, connecting with deed. I appreciate the intervention that you did, Representative Recovina, to make our problem aware to deed. And I will say, behalf of deed, the situation has greatly improved. So we appreciate the help that we've received from deed. But as some of the people that are going to speak probably later on, we continue to have bumps in the road. It isn't a perfect system, but it has improved greatly from what it was before. We too, similar to what Brad had indicated, where employees or former employees of companies are being terminated from their benefit because it continues to be a challenge, and we just need the committee to continue to work with us and try to resolve those issues for those unfortunate individuals that are unemployed and aren't really seeing any employment opportunities out on the horizon. So that's it, Mr. Chairman, unless there's a question.
Mr. Melander, you've had some folks that have been on the bench, as we say, for quite a while now, and are there people actually that are completely exhausted, have exhausted and dropping off, and what's happening?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, committee members, yeah, there are people that are falling off the radar screen. I mean, every day, and I can't give you direct cases, but communications or conversations that we've had with business managers from all parts of the state, it is a daily occurrence where individuals have lost their unemployment, they're losing their houses, their lives are falling apart, their marriages, their families, their kids, their lives are in turmoil. So anything that the committee can do to make additional opportunities available for those unemployed, as I have said, are probably going to be quite a while before they get back off of the bench would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, congratulations and sympathies.
Sure.
You know, I guess Sister Benson didn't teach you as smart as she should have.
Nor did she help with you either.
No, she didn't. In your conversations with the business managers, construction trade breaks down vertical construction and highway heavy. Are those conversations with those business managers, are you finding that one is doing worse, one sector is doing worse than the other, or is one recovering a little bit? Because, you know, I work with the tools, so I don't talk to many of the business managers, but my sense was that a lot of the transportation was construction was picking up some of that, but the vertical construction was still in the dumps.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, that's absolutely correct. You know, folks are starting to identify our industry as vertical or horizontal construction. Representative indicated as highway heavy. There are some employment opportunities within the highway heavy industry just due to seasonal funds that are used, and also there is some help with the stimulus, but by no means is it having an impact at all on clearing our benches. I just had the opportunity to talk with Adam Dunick of the operators, and they still have significant unemployment, where at this time of the year, on even a bad year, there may be a couple hundred folks, as we say, riding the pine. Now there's 1,000 to 1,500, at least specifically within the operating engineers industry. Vertical construction is the Dead Sea. Business managers are becoming very, very concerned that those crafts that are experiencing 20 to 30% unemployment right now their numbers are going to exceed 50% by year's end. So whatever you all can do outside of this committee to make that happen, to create some employment opportunities, would be greatly appreciated, because there is no light at the end of the tunnel for folks that deal within the vertical construction industry. So that's absolutely correct, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Melander, you're in your new capacity. You're going to be up here like your predecessor was here this next session. And, you know, what would your suggestion be to the governor and to Deet? Because we're just talking about unemployment right now, but they are the Agency for Economic Development, too, which I think has been, lacking greatly in this administration. But what are you, if you had a Christmas wish or whatever, what are you going to be up here recommending for to happen next session?
Chairman Rukavina, committee members, is this where I get to have an opinion?
You should have an opinion. I'm sure Commissioner McElroy is going to have one later, so we'll give you one now, earlier.
Representative Rukavina, I mean, whatever folks within either side of the House and the Senate can do, either side of the aisle, to create employment opportunities, this isn't just opportunities for union members, it's employment opportunities for Minnesotans that work in the construction industry. Any type of jobs bill, any type of mechanism that the state and the governor can provide to create private investment in the state, or to participate with private investment, would be greatly appreciated. I know there was an effort last year that started to get some legs, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, didn't move forward. But those types of opportunities and creativities that you all have here to create employment, especially within the vertical section of our industry, would be greatly appreciated. And we would hope that yourself and the governor would listen to those unemployed Minnesotans so that they can go to work and feed their family like they would like to, rather than getting an unemployment check.
Let me ask you for a favor, too, before we let you go. You, as a member of IBEW, have seen your particular union with huge unemployment numbers here, even before this recession started. So do me a favor and see what you can find out as far as those numbers of folks who have at least an IBEW, or you should be able to find them, that have completely dropped off the system, because I think that'll be one of the things we're asking the commissioner. I don't know how well those numbers are kept, but I think the unemployment numbers are a lot higher than we even see, and those are the figures that we are hidden and we can't get our hands around. So maybe you can, at least in your own capacity, find those numbers out there.
Chairman Rukavina, committee members, there are hundreds and probably thousands of families that have fallen off of the radar screen. Frustrations, I mean, we're starting to see a significant amount of people with family problems, which create chemical dependency problems, which create additional costs for the state. But the number is significant, and I will do my best to try to provide that to you within the near future.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, and then Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Melander, the chair spoke to the electricians. I know you come out of the carpenters local, so I actually have a couple of carpenters in my, not carpenters, but electricians in my district that called me and at age 54 chose to take early retirement because they're been on the bench for 2 years and took the huge penalty just because they needed the money. And they're telling me that there's been at least a couple, 300 that are dropping off and turning their book back in. So on top of the electricians, if you could, I suspect that that's happening in the other trades, carpenters being one of them.
Did I screw up? He's not a member of carpenters union. I didn't get that.
That's an honorable profession under Bill Holmes, Mr. Chair.
I thought he was IBEW. Did I screw up here?
Representative Chairman Rukavina, Representative Mahoney, I know enough that if the chair wants to call me electrician, plumber, whatever, that's what I'm going to be today.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, a related question, either for the witness or maybe when Deed comes before us, is the question of underemployment. The way the question was posed to, you know, those that have dropped out of the system, and I have heard that you could add 4 or 5 points to the statistical unemployment with people who are underemployed. In fact, I had a person just last week call me who's in one of the construction trades who gets a few hours now and then, works a week, and then he's laid off again, and then he might get called back for another week or something like that. So if they could address that issue, I'd appreciate it.
When he gets up and he can be landed.
Yeah, and Chairman Herkovina, I'd like to respond to that and just give an example of one of our crafts that right now is presently, you know, close to 30% unemployment. Of the 70% that is employed, 80% of those individuals are working a reduced work week, which is 40 hours or less. So in that case, you know, roughly half of their membership is working full-time, and the rest of them are either unemployed or underemployed. So the reason that's happening is that because most of our groups are self-insured, where money goes in, money goes out, and we have to have a minimal amount of hours during a month to qualify for health insurance for ourselves and our family, people are rotating their work schedule so that they can try to continue to provide those benefits to as many members as possible. So that's an ongoing occurrence for a lot of crafts, and it's happening more and more.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, if Deed can respond to that question generally as well. Thank you.
When they get up there, we'll have them. I'm sure they'll be ready for that. Any other questions?
Thank you. Nice to have you here, Mr. Melander.
Thank you.
I just want to comment that I've been running into a lot of business managers and business owners. A lot of bids are coming in a lot lower on projects. And so a lot of the owners are now putting in just enough of a bid so that they can just keep their head above water, keep people employed, but aren't really making any money. Are you seeing a lot of that in the industry right now?
Chairman Herkovina, Representative McFarland, yes. I mean, and I'll give you a perfect example of that happening, and that is going on where contractors, at least in our industry, have a core group of employees. They want to keep them. They've been there for a long time. They have a history with the company and make their companies profitable. So they're doing everything they can to maintain those individuals. The city of Indigo Grove Heights recently had a project that was an addition to the public government center. It was budgeted at $20.7 million, and it came in at $16.3. It carried, and I'm proud to say, it not only carried prevailing wages, but also had a public sector a project labor agreement on it. So that is happening, and it's happening almost everything that we're seeing. So businesses are keeping people, but they're not making money either.
So, Representative Carlin, given the fact that, you know, materials from that are cheaper and bits are coming in lower, I would hope that you'd be supporting me like in $1.5 billion bond. The minimum.
Mr. Chair, I'm hearing that some of those bids on some of our higher ed institutions are coming in below bid, too.
Yeah,
I know that. Okay, any further questions? If not, then thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that isn't on the agenda that we knew about that would like to talk about what's happened to them at the Department of Employment and Economic Development? Come on up and identify yourself. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman of the committee. My name is Tim Olson. I'm a duplicated worker, worked in the print manufacturing industry for IWCO Direct, and I just kind of wanted to talk about some of the hurdles that we've been facing going through the duplicated worker program to kind of elaborate on what the first person said. We've had, from the very beginning, from cooperation from the company all the way on down seems to make everything more difficult, to the point where the rapid response team never got a complete list of the employees that were let go, which is now just shy of 250 people, which led to poor outreach to a lot of people that are out of work, that Some of them have language barriers. English is not a first language. They don't have any way to get a hold of these benefits, any way to get involved in the system. We have to the point where then when we hired the nonprofit agency to take over our project, they're completely swelling at the seams and seem to not be able to handle the capacity of the extra incoming people at all times, so it overloads the counselors that deal with people on a one-on-one basis, which makes it difficult to get phone calls back, difficult to get the services that are provided by the Dislocated Worker Program in a manner that sometimes comes really close to denying them the opportunity to get funding to go back to school or support services for people that are behind on their mortgage or people that need just money to repair their car to go out and look for a job or to find time to meet with their counselor just to find jobs that are outside of just what they can find through the workforce or in the newspaper.
So I understand it. So did you have a mass layoff or a major layoff, and then you rapid response team, was that organized through a union or give us a little more information on that.
Mr. Chairman, the rapid response team is a small group of people that are employed through the Dislocated Worker Program. So when a company lays off more than 50 individuals, they're notified by the state through the WARN Act, or their WARN notice, which we were given just on our date of termination for the second layoff. And their job is to basically inform the people that were laid off or released from their job that these services exist and that they can get help or money through them. Now, our company has done two waves of layoffs now. The first one was 47, so those employees weren't affected by the WARN or eligible for the separate Dislocated Worker Project Fund that you can get when you have a large number. The second time around, the number of people released were around 192, which triggered the rapid response team to come in and try and do outreach to find everybody. Well, what happened was they'd already let us go, and then by the time the rapid response team came in, everybody was scattered. They went back home, nobody was working. Even though the WARN would have allowed them to work, they chose to just terminate us. Well, because the company didn't provide the full list of names of people that were let go, they never got any notice that this project was available to them. Without notice of the project being there, these people can't get any help at all. And the printing industry is hit pretty hard from the recession. I know people that got laid off in March and still have absolutely nothing. They have no jobs. The things that are offered, even through the service provider that we hired, are less than what a lot of people are going to make on their unemployment. So either being, you know, going back to work at less than 50% of what they already made, or just waiting until their benefits run out, or hopefully the economy turns around in the whatever time they have to collect unemployment if they don't know these benefits are here for them.
Can you quickly tell us how it affected you individually?
I'm the chairman of the employee management committee for the project, and even I have had almost barely missed my opportunity to go back to school to retrain. I'm a younger guy, so you know, going back to college full time for me is pretty much, you know, it's a no brainer to be able to go back and do it. Some guys are in their 50s, some guys are older. Well, I needed help. I needed my They were going to pay for my tuition. I needed it done by the 7th. Come the 5th, I couldn't get a hold of anybody. If it wasn't for Chairman Rukavina helping me out, just because he knows me personally, I probably wouldn't have been able to get the services that are provided for me. I couldn't get a hold of anybody. My counselor is completely overwhelmed. He's not in his office. You had to go to a job interview seminar with some of the people that are on his docket. The next day, he was given a whole other project from another company separate from ours that laid a large portion of people off, and there's more people that are going to be piled onto his list of already people that he can barely help now. I make 10 or 15 phone calls to him, phone calls to his supervisor, emails, voicemails, but nobody has any time to call you back. Their voicemails are full. Your emails go unnoticed because they have so much stuff going on. So I can tell that they want help, but I can just tell that their capacity is just way beyond what they have. And it just makes me wonder how many of these projects these companies can take on at a time without having any kind of guideline, or they just pile it on because these people need help, but if it's more than they can sustain, but there isn't anybody else there to take these on, at some point it's going to be more than the system can bear.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Jim Olson.
Mr. Olson, when were you laid off?
Chairman Rukavina Anderson. I don't know how to address you guys.
It's all good.
Representative Anderson, I'm sorry. What was the question again? I got flustered.
Mr. Olson, when were you laid off?
Officially, I was let go on May 8th, but because of the WARN, our last day of pay was July 8th. And we began to see benefits, or then we began to get our outreach notification from the Rapid Response Team for the Dislocated Worker Program in the middle of June.
Mr. Chair, Representative, or Mr. Olson, so that was mailed to your home then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions of Mr. Olson, Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson, I earlier spoke about employees or people that were laid off with English as a second language. And they having a significant number of trouble. Do you have an idea of, out of the 250 people that were laid off, how many of them were, I'm going to guess they're immigrants, or how many new arrivals were in that group, or people with English as a second language in that group?
This is a large portion of them. The company that I worked for had had maybe 15 different countries from employees there, everything from Somali descent to Hmong to, you know, Bosnian or wherever. I mean, the portion was pretty large. I would say at least 40% of the employees left. So it makes it more difficult. If they have to find these benefits on their own, if a lot of them, English as a second language, they don't speak very good English, some of them don't. Finding information on the Dislocated Worker Program on their own, if they're not outreach to, a lot of time is, you know, more than you could expect of somebody.
Thank you.
Representative Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have missed it, but can you tell me the business that you were in or working for?
Print manufacturing.
Located where?
Printing in Chanhassen, Minnesota.
Okay. My question is, this layoff, any indication of when they may be rehiring, or has the business folded entirely?
Mr. Olson, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Norton.
Thank you. As far as I know, they don't have any intention of bringing any of us back. Upon the completion of my WARN notice, everybody's paid time off, benefits are paid to them in full. The action letter that we got when they let us go in May was a simple reduction in force action letter, and they never gave any indication that they were ever going to bring anybody back. I know some people in more of the lower-paying manual labor portions have been brought back on a temporary week-here, week-there basis, but none of anybody that had worked there for any significant amount of time other than entry-level employees has been given any indication that they'll ever be called back.
Okay, Mr. Chair. I was just trying to clarify whether this was a shutdown, as somebody else had talked about.
No, they're still...
This is still functioning.
Cool. Yep.
Just downsized. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Olson at all? Thank you very much for coming forward with your story, and good luck to you. Your education.
Thank you.
Mr. Zander, you had contacted the fine, so why don't you come on down, and members, we passed out a letter that Mr. Zander had just delivered to the committee administrator. Welcome to the committee. And both of you then can identify yourself when you begin to speak.
David Zander, Council on Asian Pacific, State Council.
Sunny Chantana Wong, Lao Assistant Secretary of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, representatives, the last hours of the legislative session, I remember saying we'll see you in February. So I'd like to start with a line from a folktale I was telling at the Irish Fair yesterday, Finn McCool. I didn't expect to see you yet, but we're very glad to be here to give you an update. Since we finished, we've been doing research to prepare a report for you on the unemployment in the Southeast Asians. It's very, very grim. I really appreciate the previous testimony, people like Mr. Tim Olson and the problems. Everything that you are hearing about the mainstream workers is even more compounded for the Southeast Asians. I have collecting the stories now, and I particularly want to draw your attention to the Lao 50, 55 years plus, who many, many years of working as machine operators but laid off, and very, unfortunately, still very limited English skills and very limited job skills or formal education to even qualify for retraining. And the main point that we want to try to bring to you is that, as you know, we were here testifying and we got appropriation all the way through the conference committee, the House and Senate, all the way to the governor's desk, and it was vetoed. That was money that would have funded four or five Southeast Asian agencies to really well serve this group of unemployed. They're pouring in. I go there regularly, Monday or Tuesday, and the offices are filled with Lao. Now, Sonny does not have this funding, but he's trying to do his best. So we've been bringing in people to explain about their benefits, Hennepin County people. We've been bringing in people from the library to explain what services that might be at the library. But we are really hearing the anxiety there, the frustration, the need, the short-term need. Where are the jobs? Please help us find the jobs. It is heartbreaking to be in these agencies. Sonny's agency is on Olson Highway, Highway 55. But the Lao he serves are all through the state. Many are in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park. What we are hearing repeatedly is the frustration with the workforce centers. Now you're hearing how overloaded the employment counselors are at these workforce centers. I would like to ask the commissioner how many Lao speaking staff he has. How many Lao unemployed have come through his door? How many Lao that he will hope to place by the end of the year? It's a very, very dismal prospect. The Lao are so frustrated. They go in there, all they will happen is they might be directed to a computer. They don't have the skills to job search on the computer. What we are hoping for is a better relationship to help these do this outreach to these most difficult to employ, re-employ Lao. And I think that's basically it. It's in our letter, and we're very much wanting to hear the access to the federal stimulus program. How do we get it to people like Sonny? Some of the unemployed are here today. I would really welcome them. And then Kinnery, the young Lao, Bunluth, they are trying to help these families, but they don't have the funding to do this work. How do they find links to the employers? Two more things. I'm interviewing a lot of people. There's a quote from Robinson Cook at Lutheran Social Services, the employment manager, trying to find jobs for the immigrant refugees in today's economy is like trying to push a baseball through a garden hose. I think I'll use that for a subtitle of our report. The jobs aren't even getting posted. Robinson said nobody will post a job now because they get blitzed with applications. And so how do we help these groups, Sonny, make the link to possible employers?
Welcome. Mr. Chairman, my name is Sonny. I bring my community here. My community went to our agency for an average like 40 to 50 people per week to do unemployment rate. We have to help them fill out the form unemployment. After that, we have to do weekly report to make sure that they report properly. And after that, what I asked them, what are you doing after that? They have been seeking for the jobs up to 9 months, and up to 6 months, they could not find any job. And I said that, how did you find it? I just pretty much do whatever I try to do resumes and fax to in and drop in at the companies, but no, the company did not get it. I think that we find a solution that those people need to be connected to the companies that need us to be bridge between the company and our community, hardly for them to walk it in and get a service, get a job right away. So these people need to training inappropriate. Culture, they need to be learning more, and then we need to be one-on-one with them, or need to be close to work with them. So we have a huge number, not just only Laos, but Southeast Asian. Those people working hard for more 20 years, 15 years. When you look at in their resume, they just don't have, I was since 1992 to 2009, and that's it in their resume, what you're doing, running the machine. And then they have competed with so many people who have higher degree than them. We need a lot of huge service in our community. Just not that Lao, but Vietnamese, Hmong, and I believe that other immigration community too.
It is unfortunate that we skipped these 6 years to try to fund your initiative, and we did hold it all the way till the end and got it in the bill. So. You know, I'm sorry that it got vetoed, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zander, you know, you weren't the only one that had some line item vetoes done. I had five, I think, that were programs that I had championed, and I'm pretty clear on some of the governor's reasoning. I followed this one because I have a large Hmong population in my district. I can't quite remember the veto message, but I think it was something about duplicative services. Do you remember what the governor's message was on it?
That he had funded to displaced
work. I'm sorry, what?
Displaced worker programs, Representative Mahoney. His rationale was that he had put money into the displaced worker programs, so that he said, from his perspective, there was sufficient funding coming.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
So in your opinion and your the community that you deal with, that's not the case that's going on?
Certainly not the case. And
thank you.
I know Representative Mullery has written a letter addressing that point to the commissioner. I'm not sure she's had a response yet. But the workers that Sunny is trying to help, they do not get the help that they need. They need one-on-one, very intensive help, not the very brief, short help they might get through a workforce center. They need a Lao-speaking employment counselor. They need help putting their applications together. It's a very intensive one-to-one service that they need, and they want so desperately to get back into the workforce. So we're not talking about MFIP, we're not talking about work welfare, we're talking about workers laid off. I can put a list of companies. Some companies have closed down. There was a story of one has moved to Canada, one Malaysia. So the jobs have disappeared. One or two companies, there might be some kind of openings later, but. And then they say they're machine operators, and there's a certification process. You know, how do we retrain? They do not have that formal education to even begin to access these training programs.
Mr. Zander, son, maybe you can help me. And here actually is the language. Represent Mahoney, this program would be duplicative as the same group of individuals can be served by the duplicated worker program. Either one of you, what percentage of the population that we're talking about here has received duplicated worker dollars to go back to school, get retrained? Do you know that number?
I believe that most of them came to our agency. I did not mention about that. pretty much need help direct from us. That we even mentioned that have you been in workforce center, have you received those things? It seems to me that it seems they did not be aware of those things.
Okay, and Mr. Zander, in your little memo here,
you make
a statement. I'm just wondering here, when you refer to the state workforce centers, and you mentioned three of them by name here, that you don't think we're very friendly in trying to help your constituency. Are you talking about, do you know, are these DEED employees, or are they the workforce service area employees who actually, Mr. Olson, I think, was talking about them? Do you know, who are you talking about here?
We had a conference, Representative Rukavina, legislator. We had a conference on economic vitality, and we tried to have people from the workforce centers there. I didn't even get phone calls returned. We did have one success from Ramsey County Workforce Center, but there was people. You know, we found our way to talk to people in the city of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, but they're saying, oh, perhaps they're just overloaded, you know, their work. But we have not had a good response. And we've been busy trying to put a report together, so we still have lots of gaps in this situation. But what I ran into, we held the forum in Representative Champion's district. The people in Brooklyn Center, Workforce Center, said it's out of our turf, even though the Lao, the Hmong coming were from Brooklyn Center. We tried getting the person from the North Minneapolis Workforce Center. Well, she works out of South Minneapolis. We found out who this lady was, made calls, never had any reply. Very disappointing. We were really wanting them there to start to build this collaborative between the agencies on the north side and the workforce centers.
Well, are there any other questions? If not, Commissioner, I hope, you know, staff is listening to these, because it sounds like particularly this community is falling through the cracks. So thank you very much, Sonny and David, for your comments. And I think, Commissioner, we'll get you up, unless there's any other folks that want to come forward, workers that may have some problems with them, Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a couple of comments to make on some of the things that were said. Representative Hodge and I were at the Minnesota Librarians Association meeting in St. Cloud about 2 weeks ago, and I would like to express some of the comments that they made to us about their frustration with some of the problems that they're having with libraries. And Mr. Zander said that he had invited librarians to the meetings with the constituents to talk about what services were available to the libraries. And I think what was expressed to us was the frustration of the librarians in that they have to limit the number of minutes that people can have a computer available to them in most situations throughout the state now. Library hours have been cut because of local government aid cuts, and libraries have fewer workers at the libraries also because of economic cuts that they've made. And so the expectations of the people and the workforce people that they have with how people could use the library is becoming more and more limited as things get worse and worse. And because they are people of service, they were feeling very frustrated and bad about it too. So that's just another aspect to this issue that was pointed out by every single speaker of the the things that have to be done to comply with the rules or with the law or with the program, and yet at every place that a worker might have to turn for help, it's limited because the program is not there. And then what you read, they use the word duplicative. Well, they're not duplicating because everybody's program, whatever it is or whatever assistance that we think is helping, has been cut in some way. And it's so, I just understand what each person was saying, and yet it's compounded in so many ways. And people are hoping that the government is going to react, and not react in a way that says we have got more.
Well, we'll hopefully find out how our stimulus money is being put to good use. Representative Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Zander. In other testimony and in my experience, it's the need for one-to-one is very, very hard to get.
Where did Mr. Zander go?
I looked down. I was, you know, I'm a pretty friendly person here, Mr. Zander.
Yeah, obviously.
This was a slow pitch. Thank you. I'll have to work on my bifocals to keep somebody into it. This one-to-one, even under slight stress, is hard to acquire. I don't see this even as waiting in line for one-to-one help. I don't think there's a line to get one-on-one help. Can you help me with understanding this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hall, we are trying to find in this difficult time a solution, and we're saying that it would be wonderful if we could have more collaboration with the Workforce Center, the libraries, and these agencies. No, there's no line, and the Lao are very frustrated. They're not even going through the doors because they have not had any successful response. I want to say to Representative Murphy's point, we've had very good response from the library. We did have Chalang Lee from Brooklyn Center Library and his supervisor, Emily Watts, who came and explained the services there. Also that they were facing cuts, but they explained about, you know, helping with resumes, helping with English. But what the library said is that we do not have the direct contact with the employers. So that was a kind of a missing point. But we are looking to develop programs with Brooklyn Center Library that will better serve the Lao. So they have been extremely responsive, and we're very grateful for that. So that's exactly what I see happening. We're trying to find ways to collaborate and solve the problem.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Zander, when previous programs, when we were in session, were being described, and they're talking about the general training in order to get the job in central Minnesota, we actually at one time, and hopefully a little bit now, actually get the job and then get a training to do the job better. This is happening in some of the meat productions and a few of the other areas. In this, now when we're out of work here within this group, and we're talking about retraining, I don't see the focus on what we retrain. I mean, I don't see where we go to get the job and how do we train specifically to improve that, or is it just a general training? Can you help me with what retraining and how would that retraining work in order to make a dent into the population of putting people back to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hawes, there are two answers to that. Under our big discussions at last session, we were looking what were coming down the road under green jobs. And we found that there's no mystical green job, but that the many of the jobs will be what people already might have training for. Forklift truck operators, warehouse managers. there are, so we're looking at programs like Dakota County Tech, warehouse management. Can we get the LAO in? I'm sorry, Minnesota Knife seems to have gone out the window, and I want to be very blunt and frank. What I heard from the agencies was even a kind of a skepticism about the recruitment from MinSCU campuses. Are they really trying to bring in LAO? You know, the barriers, you need a high school education or you need such and such. So my sense is, what can we do differently to really get these workers through the door? I think there was one training, I'm sorry, this is, came up very quick, but there is a certified machine operator program, but it seems very hard to even think that the machine operators will be eligible to go for this training. But what can be done? The question about an employer, I mean, it's like, how come we have 200 LAO working for Marvin Windows in Warroad? There was a risk taken by that employer to hire one, and then it was a seed crystal. He called his brothers, his uncles, and it grew. What we need now is employers to take these risks with these hard-working employees, try one out, and I can quote these best practices, like Abbott Northwestern Hospital employing Tibetans who don't speak English, but they have found that they can get them into the dietary aid jobs, and it grows. What happens now, I've called some of the employment services, temporary employment services, like Doughty, I think it is, who say they have machine operator jobs in Roseville, and I'm saying, can you come out and meet these LAO? No, the response I get is, get them to fill the application online, then we will look at that. So we're not even be able to get that kind of face-to-face contact with a potential employer. And it's very, very discouraging.
Let's turn just very quickly, when you talk about potential employers, and you and I met some time ago, and part of the discussion was on workplace English. And what's the status of that, and how is it helping?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paulson, this is something that was really behind our efforts last legislative session. The previous success with Hennepin County Technical College, and Representative Joe Mullery has talked about how outstanding that program is. I haven't much to report on an update. I know we had some successful ventures, and I remember a dean that you know very well. We had a very outstanding program. And yes, that is the direction we would like to move in. Workforce, and that's one of the things we said to the libraries, you know, can you help? And they said yes. Around a particular construction trade or industry with workplace skills. Yes, that is a best practice. I don't know much about what's happened over the last few years. We've been busy helping on
health issues. Thank you. I think, and I hope, Commissioner, that you're listening, because I think that, you know, I think what we did last year is trying to help this constituency was a good thing, and maybe the governor, and we can somehow find some funding to fund this program again, at least when we meet next year, and we can talk to the governor into doing, because obviously there's a big hole here for this community. So I'm going to get the commissioner up here now, because I understand you have to get somewhere, Commissioner, so we'll get you up here. Sonny, did you want to say anything else?
Yes, very quick. Last February, I talked to Commissioner Hennepin County Commissioner for the Workforce Center, and then they said, Sonny, I can meet with you and then with the hired staff, who have power on it. And we meet in April, and then they promised me, Sonny, I can have somebody to help you in it, one full time at least. Until now, nobody showed up.
Well, we're going to try to take care of this for you. Let's get back in session. Commissioner, come on up and maybe give a little quick update on what you're trying to do, both for economic development and to solve some of these problems we've heard about here today.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I appreciate the opportunity to learn from the people who testified and to discuss with you. It's really a challenging situation. Let me take a few minutes to provide some general information about the unemployment insurance program, about our workforce programs, and about economic development. Then I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about the specific challenges we heard today. And I'd like Lee Nelson to join me at that time. I'm glad to have you hearing that one of the challenges that we're working with is employers who don't understand that the dislocated workers program shouldn't be threatening to them, that there aren't any costs to them, that they've already paid for it through their taxes. And we perhaps can work together to find ways to get increased cooperation. Some employers are wonderful and some employees simply won't cooperate with. So let me begin first with the unemployment situation. As you have seen, the national rate for July was announced at 9.4%. Minnesota's most recent numbers are for June and also at 8.4%. But that's a statewide average. And as the chairman indicated, it is dramatically higher than that in some pockets in northeastern and north central Minnesota. The highest county unemployment rate is in Clearwater County, where Bagley is the county seat, at about 18%. Kuchiching is up close to that. Aiken and Kennebec are very high. St. Louis is a little, the county rate's about 11.9%, but the areas that the chairman pointed out have among the highest rates in the state. You may recall that Minnesota's unemployment rate was higher than the national average for a few months in 2008. And it helped me understand this when I heard John Adams from the University of Minnesota say that a state economy is best thought of as a mosaic, and the segments are made up of industry clusters, and industry clusters perform in different ways. And we were hit early in the recession by the downturn in single-family, in all construction, but it started with single-family, and mortgage origination and finance, and then just a couple of months later by the downturn in the building products industry and the building components industry. So we have 7 oriented strand board facilities in Minnesota, and I believe only 3 of them are operating currently and 1 not full-time. Our dimensional lumber sawmills, I'm only aware of 1 or 2 that are operating. Companies like Marvin Windows, that was mentioned in War Road, Anderson Windows, our kitchen cabinet companies were all very heavily impacted quite early. We lead the nation in mortgage, I shouldn't say lead, we have among the largest clusters in the nation in mortgage origination and finance with companies like JMAC ResCap and Wells Fargo Mortgage, and they were hit very early. After the recession broadened to cover more sectors in October, our rate then went back to its more normal position of 1 to 1.25 below the national rate. But almost every sector of the economy is down. We divide jobs into 9 major sectors, and the only one that's up year over year is healthcare and private education. Financial services, but for mortgage, would be at a break even. The sectors that are most badly affected are construction and essentially all elements of construction, most areas of manufacturing, mining and extractive industries. And in the middle of that are trade, transportation, and utilities that have been, and leisure and hospitality that have been kind of up and down but are not particularly good. The areas of the state, we mentioned the areas of the state that have particularly high unemployment. The areas that have a little lower unemployment are in the Morehead-Fargo metropolitan area. Southwestern Minnesota, largely because of meatpacking and poultry operations, and the Rochester metropolitan area. We've lost about 4% of the jobs in the community. We've lost just under 4% of the jobs in the metropolitan area. We've lost more than that in northern Minnesota, less than that in Rochester and Moorhead. So we've gone from 2.75 million to about 2.65 million jobs. We have gained people in self-employment. It's hard to know whether that was voluntary and something they wanted to do or something people were pushed into. But the Secretary of State's office tells us that the formation of new businesses is at increased levels. And the number of people that are claiming 1099 income and filing scheduled fees with their taxes is up fairly substantially. We have somewhere in the range of 300,000 to 400,000 self-employed individuals in Minnesota. When it comes to the unemployment insurance program, the number of people on benefits is at a very high level. We currently are paying benefits to about 175,000 individuals. The new claims for benefits are a little hard to talk about because they are impacted by the season of the year as much as by the economic cycle. But just to put it in context, at the beginning of the year, our worst week for new accounts was the week of January 9th, and about 17,500 people either started or reopened accounts. That compared to 14,500 approximately in the comparable week the year before. Last week, the week ended August 1st, we had 7,035 approximately new accounts open. And that compares to about 4,300 in the comparable week a year ago. So the relationship isn't a lot different. It is the number of people on benefits is coming down just a little. Some of that is seasonal rather than part of the economic cycle. We're paying about $50 million a week in benefits, of which about $35 million a week is from the State Unemployment Insurance Trust and the balance from federal uninsurance programs. Mr. Chairman, you asked about the stimulus bill. From our point of view, the part of the stimulus bill that helps the most people the fastest are the provisions for unemployment insurance. And there are, I believe, five. The one that has been most helpful is the $25 increase in the weekly benefit. And for people on shared work, which I'll talk about more in a minute, even if they only get a relatively small amount of small benefit, they get an extra $25 each week. That's been very helpful. The first $2,400 of benefits are tax exempt this year just for 2009 for taxes, unemployment insurance benefits paid in 2009, and they're exempt from both state and federal. The state legislature conformed to what the federal government had done, and the federal government did that as part of the stimulus bill. There also was $130 million transferred from the Federal Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund to the state funds to assist in paying benefits. There was also a 26-week extension added as part of the stimulus bill. And the state law extension, which would normally be paid for 50% from the state trust and 50% from the federal trust, is for this year paid 100% from the federal government. In addition to that, the money we've needed to borrow or will need to borrow from the federal trust is interest-free for 2009. So we estimate that the total value to Minnesota workers of the unemployment insurance provisions in the stimulus bill is over $700 million. So it's a very considerable benefit.
Well, maybe that's a good thing the governor did take that money instead of refusing it.
Like Mr. Chairman, there was what the governor said, and I want to be very clear, is that Minnesota taxpayers paid for the stimulus bill. There was never any consideration of not taking it. He said it wouldn't have been the bill that he might have loved to have seen, but that it has done good things for Minnesota, and we paid for it. You may have noticed that we are a little higher.
I don't recall him saying it that way, initially, but that's your historical perspective.
I did hear him say it that way. He may have said it other ways as well. We did not have the extreme cost to meet the federal requirements that some states did. For southern states, particularly Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina, it was a very expensive undertaking because they had very bad benefits to begin with. They didn't provide benefits to part-time employees. They had odd qualification requirements. They didn't meet any of the Unemployment Insurance Modernization Act requirements. we believe that the cost to the system, to employers principally, was about $1 million a year to get the benefits I described, and they were good things to do. They were provisions that we had been considering through the Unemployment Insurance Fund anyway, or Unemployment Insurance Advisory Commission anyway. So, Mr. Chairman, that I think is the summary of what's happened with unemployment. In terms of the Workforce Center program, we did receive a significant amount of federal assistance to assist workers in our workforce centers. And we certainly want to thank our Workforce Center partners, the not-for-profits that operate the 16 Workforce Center systems and 47 Workforce Centers across the system. Let me just run through the new resources that we have gotten and what we think what's happening with it. The Dislocated Workers Program got $20.6 million of federal funds in addition to the regular annual allocation, which was increased because of our higher unemployment rate, and the State Dislocated Workers Program. For the year, there's about $65 million in total from now until the end of Federal 10. We have asked our partners to do their best to get 70% of that into training and the balance into resume writing skills, classes, a variety of things. It is divided between formula money that goes to the workforce service areas by formula and money that's reserved for large layoffs like the ones Mr. Olson experienced and that he described. And I do want to talk about his experience in a few minutes when I finish going through the stimulus money. We also received $16.1 million for youth programs, which is in addition to our regular structured WIA youth program and Minnesota youth. And Mr. Chairman and members, it has enabled our workforce service partners to employ about 5,600 young people ages 15 to 24. Most of it goes to that. Some goes to job training and career exploration classes. We have gotten noticed by the federal government because we were quick to get this money out and in many cases had programs ready to go when school was out, and it's been helpful. The program this year increased the eligible age to 24, which we has been a helpful thing. We also received $6.9 million to help add staff in the workforce centers to help workers. Between deed staff and our partners, there are about 200 more people helping in workforce centers today than there were prior to the passage of the Stimulus Act. We've also added, we had added about 50 computers earlier this year. We started last year, I believe, with about 500 computers in the workforce centers. We added 50 early. We just added 50 more, so we're at about 600. I certainly understand the concerns that Representative Murphy heard from the librarians that they're often stressed, and we have, we leave to each workforce center how they handle the allocation of computers, whether they have time limits or not. Some do and some do not. But particularly earlier in the week, and I would ask if you could help us, the workforce centers tend to be most swamped Monday, Tuesday, a little less on Wednesday, less on Thursday and Friday, and same with some of our other services. But we know that there are often long waits for computers, particularly earlier in the week. We also received $6.3 million in additional funding for adult employment and training through what's called the Workforce Investment Act, or WIA Adult Program. That tends to be used for very low-income people who need assistance, and it's distributed by formula to the 16 WSAs. We received about $500,000 for senior community service employment programs for assist low-income seniors, often in part-time jobs and often for nonprofits. State Services for the Blind received $1.4 million, and it's been used to hire counselors and placement help to assist blind people who want to work in the community to do so, and some with some independent living and other assistance for blind and vision-limited Minnesotans. We also received about $4.2 million for vocational rehabilitation to help those with barriers to employment through our state voc rehab program. This often goes to on-the-job training programs, work experience programs, and skills development programs. And the need among those populations have increased during this difficult economic time. In terms of economic development, I was interested in the discussion that Representative Mahoney had with Mr. Melander about the components. Most of the help that we have gotten to assist communities is in what is described as horizontal construction. The Public Facilities Authority, and Terry Coleman is here and can add more detail if you have questions, received $109 million in funds for two programs, the Clean Water Program, which is essentially sewage treatment and sewage collection programs, and for Clean Water Programs. We now have sufficient certifications from the PCA and the Department of Health to allocate all of those dollars. We will also have about $315 million from our base program, the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund and the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. And I'm hopeful we'll get more than $400 million of projects funded. You had the discussion about bids. The bids for clean water and drinking water have come in at very attractive rates and will enable, in some cases, communities to get more work done or to lower the water and sewer rates that they might otherwise have had to charge. Another program that assists in economic development is called the Small Cities Development Program. And it is the program, the way that the federal government distributes community development block grants in small communities. Those of you who live in the metropolitan area or in St. Louis County or Stearns County are in what are called entitlement counties, and the counties receive community development block grant money directly. The state receives about $16 million for small cities, and then this year received $5 million in ARRA stimulus money to assist small communities with projects such as housing revitalization, commercial building revitalization, and the money can be used for some public facilities such as fire halls and township halls. We have typically, as I indicated, had around $16 million. This year we have $22 million. That's gone out in 51 grants to communities in every corner of the state. And some of them are incredibly small and creative communities. One I want to take just a moment to talk about is a joint effort from the communities of Boy River, Federal Dam, and Bena. In eastern Cass County, they're on the east side of Leech Lake. The largest of them is Bena, which has a population of 130. Federal Dam is about 100. And Boy River, which was the lead community in this effort, has a population of 38. And with the help of Cass County staff, they will use those funds to assist principally elderly homeowners in some home repair, revitalization, updates. A number of the other communities in this program are also quite small. That's money that gets to work quite quickly. I would hope that all of that work would be under contract and completed this year. We've also been active. There's no secret. The economic development programs are challenging this year because it's been difficult to get bank financing for business expansions. Businesses have been hesitant to undertake expansions. But we've had a surprising number of successes, and if they go not just to what our team has done, but to what cities and regional economic development folks and a variety of others have done. And the lineup of prospects for projects that may go ahead as the economy improves is encouraging, but there have been a fair number of things that have gone so far. For example, the Urban Initiative Program that works principally in low-income areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the First Ring suburbs has done about 60 loans of $892,000 that have leveraged about $3 million of other capital and created more than 600 jobs. We have had contaminated cleanup grants to help clean up sites about 65% in the metro area and 35% in greater Minnesota. We've had $10.8 million in grants this year, and the applications commit to 1,700 jobs. The redevelopment program has had $5.8 million in programs and 833 jobs. The Greater Minnesota Infrastructure and Bioscience program had $11.4 million awarded to 33 projects around the state. Some of the community projects that I want to report on, we have seen a number of European companies build factories in Minnesota because of the high value of the euro compared to the dollar, and because their customers are looking to get suppliers closer to the final assembly. Hydro Controls built a manufacturing facility in Red Wing with about 25 jobs. Barrel of Fun is in the process of doing an expanded potato chip factory in Perm. I don't recall the number of jobs, but it's significant. A company called Daikin McQuay, the form you might remember as McQuay Perfect, built an engineering center in Plymouth and added 65 jobs. Case New Holland moved a production facility to Benson, Minnesota from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan and added 90 jobs. Michael Foods built an expanded potato processing plant. Some of the jobs were moved from the Seward neighborhood of Minneapolis, but many are also added. The total employment there will be about 300. Molded Fiberglass, which is a wind turbine blade manufacturer, is opening a blade repair facility in Worthington. Molventus, a Finnish gearbox manufacturer, has announced, but not yet broken ground, on a plant in Faribault to build wind turbine gearboxes and employ about 85 people. And SportTech has announced the expansion in Elk River. We have one that isn't on the list but is now within the paper is Westinghouse has announced a joint venture in Hutchinson with a company called Hutchinson Manufacturing, not to be confused with Hutchinson Tech, a different company. Hutchinson Manufacturing is a large-scale welder, and they're going to build fuel handling equipment for nuclear power plants that will create about 65 jobs. And that isn't; those numbers don't add up to enough to be what we need, but they have been. I'm a little surprised that there are as many as there are in these difficult times. You will recall we had some major successes in 2008 with the decision by Danish-based Olaplast to locate their headquarters in North Minneapolis along the river, and Nestle Nutrition to locate their headquarters in St. Louis Park. We hope to get back to those kinds of announcements as the economy improves. Then, Mr. Chairman, if I could go to some of the comments that were made.
I think Representative Fulcombe has a question.
Well, I can wait if you want me to wait.
Commissioner,
do you
either
want
way,
to? Either
way. Whichever's
good
for Representative Fulcombe. Can you stop quickly then? If you would, I think there's a number of questions.
Well, I would hope there would be. Let me take the issues that we heard about. And starting with dislocated workers, the Rapid Response Team is a group of both state employees, and then we're blessed to have a person under contract from the AFL-CIO and another from the Employers Association that work with us to respond quickly to layoffs like the one at IWCO Direct. And some employers are great. As soon as, even before they announce, they will call us and get advice on how we can be helpful and when they should announce and what kind of meetings we can hold. And others have been much less than helpful. And if you can help us get the word out that there isn't any extra cost to them, there isn't anything they need to be afraid of, the sooner they let us know, the more helpful we can be. I am concerned about the not-for-profit vendor that Mr. Olson mentioned being overstretched, and if you talk to me or to one of our staff, maybe we can help. I'm not sure what we can do, but perhaps we have some contractors that are really good and get more business they can handle, some others that may have some capacity, and perhaps we can partner them up. We'll do our best to be helpful.
Commissioner, with the $21 million approximately in stimulus money for the dislocated worker program, what kind of staff, extra staff, was hired to help administer that, or was that just passed out in the formula, as you said? And when you refer to training money, is training money being like some of these job search type classes that DITA is doing that I've heard some kind of complaints about duplicativity, or what does it mean?
Training money generally means money for to pay tuition, whether that would be at a Minsky community or technical college or in another program. We don't refer to the workshops and seminars as the application of training.
You're talking that whatever figure you gave your, I think it was 70%, I can't remember.
Those to tuition, essentially.
All tuition.
In some cases, it could go to on-the-job training dollars. We have some OJT contracts.
It's what we would all understand as being.
That's correct. It is not our workshops and seminars.
And how many deed staff have been hired to assist the workforce service folks in helping a Mr. Olson type wade through the system?
About 130. And then
that are state employees or
that are state employees, and then our estimate, and Ann Olson may be able to help me, is about 70 WSA employees. We think that we're about 200 between our partners and ourselves, and then unemployment insurance has put some additional people in the field also. Where's Lee? About 15, I think, 13 additional in field office locations to assist people in applying. And so.
Okay, Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, with this, you said it was $6.4 million in new staff from the stimulus money. Of that new staff, and how many did you say were hired?
About 100, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Slocum, about 135.
Can you break out for me then, hearing what we have heard here today, and this is nothing new. I've been here 3 years and have served on this committee for 3 years, and it's been every year we hear about cultural insensitivity. We hear about staff not meeting the needs of our communities of color. I have the honor of representing Richfield and Bloomington, and I have a large Latino population, Spanish-speaking. And I can tell you that through my community, the effects of unemployment are rippling with housing foreclosures and businesses closing. And how many of these people that you hired with the stimulus money are Lao or Hmong or Latina or African-American? Women to address this issue that I have heard now for 3 years from with your office.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slocum, the short answer is I don't know, but I will find out. We can collect that information. Many are women. There are a fair number who are Hispanic and Black. We've been less successful in recruiting Latino or recruiting Hmong and Somali, but we've been working at that, and I'll get you some numbers.
I would think recruiting here would be in this room over here, talking with the Lao community, with the Hmong community, would be a real asset for the department.
We'll do our best. But I don't have the breakdown, and we'll get it for you.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Now, Mr. Chairman, kind of a follow-up to what Representative Slocum was asking. And as Commissioner, your responsibility is to allocate resources. And so my question is, what kind of follow-up do you do or see if things, as you allocate those resources, are working? In other words, what are the priorities and then what are the outcomes? The reason I ask that question is you've heard the testimony here today, and then the second question I have, and you can address them both at the same time, is essentially what are you going to do to address the problems brought out today?
Mr. Chairman, I had not spoken to Mr. Zander before today, but we'll make an effort to reach out to him and the Sunny and see what we can do to be helpful. Some of those connections are more often with our workforce center partners, but we'll make these directly as well. There is a fair amount of accountability and transparency built into the system, and we need to report to the public and to you and to the U.S. Department of Labor the number of people who are enrolled, the number of people who start and finish training, how many get jobs in the fields for which they are trained, the wage they begin with, and then I believe it's 6 months follow-up on, correct, in retention after they are placed. And some of that is available on our website by Workforce Service Area. We're certainly happy to make it available in as much detail as you'd like.
Yeah. Go ahead. Mr. Chairman, another reason I asked that question, and you heard the testimony, you mentioned Mr. Sanders, but we've had testimony from other sectors as well that have brought out other issues. Heard the comment, though, that the employment counselors are overworked or overloaded. I think Mr. Zander said that. I think others either said that or implied it. And what I've heard is that many of the new hires with the economic stimulus money, I've heard something like 83 people are used to put on workshops and so on. And that may be fine in a sense, but we're also hearing that there's a real time lag and the inability of people to access, for whatever reason, the system. And when I talk about resources and how you as commissioner allocate those resources, I would think you'd want to address some of those issues with the new personnel that you brought on board. You know, and we've heard from the AFL-CIO, we've heard from the steel workers, the carpenters, and then Mr. Zanders representing part of the minority community. And so I think there's some real issues here that you as the manager, the commissioner, the manager of those resources need to really reallocate the time that these people spend so that you are addressing the point that you made, that one of the most successful parts of the stimulus money was the $700 million that you could get out there very quickly and promptly. And here today, Mr. Chairman, we've heard that that's not always the case. And so what you can do as commissioner to improve, and that's why I asked you about priorities and outcomes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I may not have understood the direction. The numbers I was talking about are in the Workforce Center system and what we call Job Seeker Services. We've added even more people in the unemployment insurance system to address the high workload there. And I'm going to need a little help, but I think that we've hired something over 200 people since January of 2008. We're probably up net about 150 people. We've just announced a class of 32 to help. We track that often with the wait times to talk to us on the phone. And in the time that the Chairman Rukavina had a hearing, and I'll never forget January 14, 2008, we just brought the new system up. It was had some kinks in it. We were running, in many cases, 75, 80, 90, 100-minute wait times. We had a class start the next week, and we're able to bring those down. We're now running wait times in the 2 to 3 minute average. But I wasn't satisfied with knowing the average. I wanted to know the worst wait times, and our worst wait times are 5 or 6 minutes. We've also asked, well, with an exception of some complex employer challenges, but for workers, about 5 or 6 minutes. We've also added, and I think wisely so, more unemployment insurance people in workforce centers to try and assist people who aren't as computer savvy. On Mondays and Tuesdays, we certainly don't have enough.
Commissioner, at this point, I have to interject that I'm hearing that's not happening. I am hearing that what your folks are doing, your state employees that have been hired, are still doing creative job search classes and not helping people, showing them how to operate the computers, wade through the system, actually apply for unemployment. And I've even heard of employers, of some of your UI folks up there that have actually are really trying to help that have been scolded for spending their time trying to show people how to actually get their unemployment insurance check. So, you know, I guess, first of all, I'd like to welcome Representative Houseman here to the committee, and we're honored to have you here today. And do you have any unemployment insurance questions?
No.
Okay. But back, Commissioner McElroy, you know, it shouldn't take me as the chair of this committee that oversees your budget to have to call up because hundreds and hundreds of steel workers are getting kicked out of the system because the computer doesn't know how to handle a check, one we've checked for a vacation pay. And it happened at MinTech to 1,000 employees, and now it's happening to 300 or 400 at National. And, you know, it's just because Representative Anzels and I are a little aggressive, I guess, that we call up and complain, and I have to admit, when we do get help. But what about the, you know, other representatives that aren't hearing from their constituents that are sitting around waiting 4 to 6 weeks to get a check because these computers can't understand, you know, what a temporary layoff versus a permanent layoff means. And that's what I thought these people that you were going to put out in the workforce centers were going to do, but I'm hearing that's not what they're doing, Commissioner, in response to part of Representative Carlson's question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is what they are supposed to do. I will get on top of it to make sure it is what they're doing.
Can I just ask you a question? Of these 200 or 150 now more people, how many are in the call center of those people to help with UI versus in the workforce center?
The people that I talked about first that are in the work job seeker services and the workforce programs are all in workforce centers. None of those are.
I'm talking. You just said you hired 150 net jobs since January of 08 to help with unemployment insurance.
That's
how many of them are in the call center on the phone versus sitting in a workforce center telling somebody how to get through some of these glitches?
13 of them are in workforce centers. The balance are in call centers in St. Paul or St. Cloud. And that's what's enabled us to deal with these volumes of 175,000 people.
Commissioner, I can bring the steelworkers back up here, particularly one that deals with several of the mines that have been laid off, and tell you that when they call the call center, they're told, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
It's 4 to 6 weeks, and then I call Mr. Nelson, and he gets the check in 2 days. But if I didn't call, it would, some of them have waited 4 to 6 weeks.
We'll see
to
if
get
we
a
can
check.
Fix that. That's not a situation I'm aware of, and perhaps Lee can explain to us what the problem is and what we're doing to fix.
Well, we've got other questions before Mr. Nelson.
One follow up because the outcome that you referenced, Commissioner, was the time on the phone and how that had been shortened up, and that's fine because I'm like everybody else, I don't like to hang on the phone waiting for somebody to respond. But the real question I was asking was similar to yours, Mr. Chairman, and that's how we're going to begin to resolve the issue of people really getting the help they need and in a timely manner so that that money, that $700 million that was referenced, gets out there as fast as possible. And that's the key outcome. And I don't think you really address that part of it and how you're using the resources to help these people. When you talked about phone time, and the little bit of feedback I've gotten to date is that often the people, once they get into a conversation, are simply told they can get the information on a computer. And that can be a fairly short phone conversation, and it really doesn't necessarily bridge the gaps that we've been hearing about here today from a variety of resources. So those, I think, are the outcomes you have to measure. When that person actually gets the help they need to buy the groceries, pay the rent, all of that unemployment insurance benefit is going for. And I'll just stop there unless the Commissioner has any additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, thank you. One of the issues is training, and we have needed time to train. Having more people means we can take more people off the phone to do more training. We've promoted some additional supervisors to help provide assistance as the people that we hired in early 08 and later in 08 and early this year get some time in their jobs. They get better and better at them. And I get up there reasonably often to talk to people, and remind them that these are our neighbors, and our friends that need our help, and we need to remember that. Every month I have to announce numbers, and I remind people that behind those numbers are faces and families, and so we do our best to give the service. The volume numbers are somewhat overwhelming. I take little comfort in the fact that Minnesota is doing better than almost any other state in the union in terms of keeping our call time short and our timely and accurate payments up. The fact that we made the investment in a new system when we did has probably been the right thing. I was told the old system would have melted down at 100,000 biweekly claimants. We're now at 175 weekly claimants. And several states have literally had their systems melt down and be several weeks without benefit. But the personal service is important, and we'll work, continue to work to make it better and better.
Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, to follow up a little bit with what Representative Carlson was doing, when I joined Chair Rakovina on our tour of the Southeast Technical Colleges, one of the staff people at the Workforce Center talked about how frustrating it was to, although there are new staff there, they tend to do groups or classes, and because they're managed by the state rather than locally, they can't reassign or really help with the overload that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And it seems as though, you know, that also speaks to reallocating the resources that are there, and if they could be utilized in a way that would really help those workers who are really struggling hard to do a good job at the center now, but can't utilize those people who are just doing these classes or doing This is the complaint that we heard.
One of the issues, very honestly, excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative, one of the issues is training, and it takes some time for the people that we have hired to do workforce center work to learn what counselors who've been there a long time have learned through on-the-job training. And one of the ways we are getting experience for these newer employees is to start them by taking a couple weeks of training to teach creative job search or other programs, resume writing, and then getting them to do more counseling. I believe you were in the Winona Workforce Center, and let me talk to those folks and see if I can provide some help. But it does, there's a fairly significant amount of training involved to be an effective one-on-one counselor.
Okay, Representative Lyon, anything? Okay. Representative Anderson, you had a question?
Thank you, Representative Slocum. Commissioner McElroy, I know you've talked about the different history of the unemployment for the different areas in the state. I'm assuming we can get all of that data off. I'm taking a different line here. I assume that we can get all of that information, a historical perspective, maybe over the last 10 years, on DEED's website, or because that would be helpful for me. I know we're talking about 18%. Well, I want to know, is that common to what has happened over the last 5 years for a specific area, or are we seeing a significant spike in a particular area or so forth? So,
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, the information is available on our website. It has the terrible acronym of LAUS, L-A-U-S, Local Area Unemployment Statistics. And if you go to our website at Positively Minnesota and then click on By the Numbers, you will get to it. I will tell you that the numbers Representative Rookavina and I were talking about for the mining area of northeastern Minnesota are at historically very high levels. We have not had levels, it's been some time before we've had levels that high.
Okay. And Representative Slocum, Commissioner McElroy, I'm also curious, you had talked earlier about $16.1 million for youth programs. I think that came out of the federal stimulus dollars. Has that all been exhausted?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it has been allocated. It probably has not been entirely spent. And I'm looking up to, and I'm getting an affirmative. Some local workforce areas likely still have some available capacity. Some have allocated all of their resources. They use it in conjunction with the Federal Workforce Investment Act youth money and Minnesota youth money that comes from the Workforce Development Fund. This was a good year to have those resources. Private sector jobs were very hard to come by for youth, and this was a good time.
And was that primarily used for staffing, advertisement? What was it?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, primarily used to pay wages to young people. There are some transportation costs. There are some counselor supervisor costs. But almost 6,000 young people went to work this summer because of that program.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Overmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have kind of two different questions for you. I think they tie together, but we'll see, I guess. The first deals with on the workforce centers and the work that's actually being done in those groups. I've had the pleasure of my first year here now. I'm spending my first interim talking to some employers. I've spent several different businesses. And one of the small businesses I went and talked to, the lady used to run a job coach business, and now she's expanding out and has some programs that she thought might be helpful to the state. And her story was she went to our local workforce center, which is in West St. Paul, and said, I've got this program I think will help. Really helps people focus in on what they're getting, helps them get jobs. I want to run it for free with DEED's blessing. I want to do a little pilot program there. And she was kind of turned away. And it was disappointing. There's procedures she maybe didn't follow all the way through, but it really got me to thinking about what kind of new and creative programs is DEED or the workforce centers, what are we doing that's different than what we were doing 6 months ago, 8 months ago? We got all this new money in, which is great. Federal stimulus money, not going to be there forever. We've got some new workers, it sounds like, in these groups, but what I'm hearing now, is, at least today so far, is we're doing kind of the same things we've always done. We've done some classes, we're giving some training money, all of this is important, but we've got groups that really need
one-on-one help in some centers. In other groups, they have groups that need a different type of help. Do the workforce centers have that kind of flexibility to kind of put the programs in that matter? And what are we doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Obermueller, thank you so much for asking that, and I apologize for not going into those creative new programs. Each year, the Minnesota Workforce Center Association, which is made up of the 16 Workforce Center boards, asks our members to submit what they call best practice submissions, with kind of their newest and brightest ideas. And I just finished reading their ideas, and we'd be happy to share those with you. And they're exciting. The ones I'm most excited about are often done in conjunction with NSCU campuses at getting training programs that start more frequently and operate more quickly. A number of campuses have adapted the name Fast Start or Quick Start or Quick Path or Step Up. The one that I'll take from memory is Workforce Development, Inc., which is the service provider in the southeast Minnesota area. They have about 6 or 7 workforce centers, and their headquarters is in Rochester. Did a request for proposal of the NSCU institutions in their area to create programs that they believe there was job demand for in areas like certified nursing assistants and network technicians. I don't remember them all. And they created 8 programs that could operate in 8 weeks and start monthly. And that is a big change from programs where you had to wait to the beginning of the semester or the beginning of summer session. And many of these were 16-week programs that had been condensed, not with less material, but by going for longer each day into 8-week programs. Anoka Technical College has done a similar program, and they've done some in conjunction with the Minnesota Metal Manufacturers and others with medical and healthcare job classifications and some computer science job classifications. Riverland Community and Technical Colleges in Austin and Albert Lee have also done this, and there are probably some others. So faster starts, shorter duration, more frequent is one of the things that I'm most excited about. The Workforce Center in Anoka did, and we're going to share this with all the Workforce Center managers at their meeting later this week, essentially used lean office procedures to redesign how they work with workers so they could do it more efficiently, get people enrolled in benefits more quickly, reduce waste, wasted time, and get people enrolled faster. Have people come in and often in the same day know what they may be eligible for. And so they reinvented their methods. I'm excited about that. In the Southeast that we talked about, they have a demand for certified nursing assistants, and they've done a pre-academy to identify those who may be interested in 1 week to expose them to what it would be like to be a certified nursing assistant or to move on to be a licensed practical nurse. And they have a cute name for it. Of course, they call it Camp Scrubs. And recently they did it for recent high school graduates, for community college students. They now do it for workers of all ages, and it's been quite successful. One of the purposes was they would get people into training and people would discover they didn't like the work. Now they're able to have a larger number of people finish and like the work and go on. So there are creative things going on. We certainly want to share those best practices and spread them across the system.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Commissioner. Those are fabulous stories, and I'm very glad to hear there are some success stories out there. But I guess my question was more aimed at as far as how people move from the old job to the new job. I mean, one of the things, as I've been talking to people in my district, typically who are well-educated, and they've done something for a period of time. They have job X, and this is what they know. All I know how to do is X. But they don't realize that the skill set that went into the job that they're doing is similar to something else that might be out there. And so without, these people in my district know how to use the computers, and they can go do this job search, but they're not effective at what they're doing because they're being set in front of a computer, and they're being told to do that search. Well, they can do that on their own at home. What they're coming to the workforce center to do is to get that add-on help that really focuses in the search and helps put them there. And so my question, I guess, what I really meant to get to, and I'm sorry if it wasn't clear, is are the workforce centers able to put into place pilot programs, for example, with the Lao community, that those folks apparently need one-on-one help? Can that workforce center, and the two that are referenced in this letter here, Can they start a one-on-one program? Do they have that flexibility? That's what that group needs. Why aren't we letting them do that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Obermiller, I have not had a discussion with the Minneapolis Workforce Investment Board or the Hennepin County Workforce Investment Board on this need, and we will do that. If the local board determined that that was a priority and that they had the resources from formula allocation to do that, yes, they have the flexibility to do it. There's a fair amount of flexibility. And if you would get me the information of your constituent who had an idea and wanted to pilot it, I will make sure it gets followed up.
Mr. Chair, she'll be very happy to hear that, I'm sure. I didn't mean to come and promote her business.
I can't promise that.
I can answer, too. And I don't know, Representative Obermiller, if I'm speaking to you, putting words in your mouth, but I think, does your staff have the flexibility, whether it's the Hennepin or Brooklyn Park, to do that as they see people falling through the cracks?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Perhaps not as much as I would like them to. Let me work on that. We are often creatures of continuing to do things the way we've always done them. We are working to get more flexible and more creative. Having these additional people for the next year and a half is helpful, but no, we have to constantly look for better ways to do things.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, if the Chair would so allow, I'd like to take this in a little different direction. I mean, we've spent the last hour, almost 2 hours, talking about unemployment.
Economic development is part of their...
Governor Pawlenty has been an absolute failure at job growth in this state. I mean, we have... He'll be the first governor since the Great Depression to leave office with less jobs than he started. I'm appalled. We've brought forth ideas. Both sides of the aisle have brought forth ideas. And in, other than tax cuts, I have seen absolutely nothing. And the jobs ease, which I won't go down that road today. But Governor Pawlenty has been an absolute failure of job creation, and yet now he's flying around the nation trying, well, it's another story. You know, he doesn't have the time to stay in our own state to heal the wounds that we are suffering. He's got to go out and help heal some other wounds. My question here is, this economy is not going to recover. We're not going to see the upswing until maybe at the best the third quarter of this year. And we'll be sluggish and have a bad economy, likely bad job growth economy, through 2010. Can you tell me, can you tell this committee what over the next 15 months, you as the Commissioner of Economic Development, in conjunction with our governor, are going to do a better job, to set it up for the next governor, Republican, Democrat, I don't care who, but we can't afford to continue to lose jobs at the rate that we have over the last 7 years. So please tell me, are you analyzing what you did over the last, what this administration has done over the last 6 years, 8 years? What are you coming up with plans for what you would like to see to hand off to the next governor? We, through this committee, we brought forth, and we were going to bring forth the university, the legislature, the economic development people around the state for about $70,000, I think, was in the bill. The governor line item vetoed it and said, my department's doing all that. I don't need it. So please, tell me what you're doing. Tell this committee what you're doing to change or to turn this dismal job record around. Please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I checked those numbers. I had heard that allegation made by others that there would be fewer jobs at the end of the administration than at the beginning. And that isn't consistent with the numbers. We have had two recessions during Governor Pawlenty's watch, and this two or three wars, depending on how you count them. And these have been difficult times. But let me address what is it we do to attract and keep jobs in Minnesota. And the strategy is three parts and has hundreds of partners. And interestingly enough, a think tank called the Center for Growth and Justice, Dan Sinstra, did a report on economic development in which the strategy they recommend is exactly what we're doing. And it's a three-part strategy. That is to assist current Minnesota businesses to stay in and grow in Minnesota. And we've had some considerable success at that, even in difficult economic times. 3M had not expanded in Minnesota for several decades. They have had three expansions in the last 2 years. One in Hutchinson, one in New Ulm, and a very large one in Alexandria that makes Alexandria the world's state-of-the-art sandpaper factory, and it's a big deal. We do that with many other companies around the state. You mentioned JobZ, and I know it's somewhat controversial, but it has succeeded in having the first small engine facility built in Minnesota that's been built in North America in a decade for Arctic Cat. And we saw manufacturing expansions from a number of other companies. We have nine small business development centers that work with last year about 3,400 small businesses to assist them in staying in and expanding in Minnesota. We have a fair number of successes in that, and we continue to work in that area. We work with community partners and with partners like the Regional Development Corporation, the Initiative Foundation, NIDA and Women Venture here in the Twin Cities, and many others, in assisting in keeping and growing businesses in Minnesota. Secondly, we try to help entrepreneurs start businesses. You've been very active in our Office of Science and Technology that assists people with ideas and giving federal grants to pursue them. I'm going to take this number from memory, but it's pretty close. I believe the FBIR program got about $27 million in 2008 in federal grants. That's good on a per capita basis compared to other states. I can't give you a number as to how many jobs that creates, but we will continue to try and do more and more with that program. Piece of legislation referred to as North Star Rising passed in the last legislative session, and we're pulling together a group that includes the CEO or their representative from Mayo Clinic, University of Minnesota, MinSCU, four trade associations for high-tech and scientific industries, and seven CEOs to address the question of assisting entrepreneurs and venture activities. We need to repopulate the Earl Bakken's garages. Earl Bakken found Medtronic in his garage, and we need more of those garages. And we're having some success there. I went out and visited the Minnesota Inventors Congress in Redwood Falls, and met the people who do that work, and we will continue to try and help companies that haven't formed yet start, and companies with one, two, or three employees grow. And then thirdly, we work to attract companies from other states and from other parts of the world. And we've had some success with that, particularly in 2007 and 2008, less so in 2009 because of the economy. JobZ has had, I think, 400 and some transactions, and I don't remember how many of them are out of state, but some of the biggest ones were Suzlon Wind Energy in Pipestone, Total Card in Jackson, and Daktronics in Redwood Falls, that represent examples of bringing jobs from surrounding states principally. In the case of Suzlon, it was an Indian company that started the business here for the first time. Wind power, I have to say that a piece of legislation passed for different reasons, for environmental reasons, is proving to be an economic development advantage, and that's the renewable energy standard has enabled us to attract both some wind power supply chain companies and wind power manufacturers. Suzlon is the first of scale, but we're working today with eight or nine mainly European companies looking for Midwest locations. We have a good location with some tax challenges, but we have a good location. We've also had success in the biofuels area, although because of higher prices for crops than alcohol, those are somewhat challenged at the moment, but we have added a significant number of jobs. And we're talking mainly to international companies in the biofuels area. We also go to the bio show each year and talk to national and international companies about bioscience. And our great success there has been in medical devices. We have 450 medical device companies, and we work hard to keep them growing. St. Jude elected to expand and grow in Minnesota. A number of ACV Cardio has elected to grow here. A lot of others. Coloplast bought a small company here and moved their North American headquarters here, so Bio has been a good investment. One thing I'm rather excited about, we have two Chinese drug manufacturers that are talking to Minnesota manufacturers about manufacturing their products here because of quality control concerns for drugs coming from China. And that would be a kudo, and we continue to work hard on that. We also continue to work hard with partners. The event that the chairman mentioned that I have to leave for is with APEX, the Arrowhead Partnership for Economic Expansion, and a prospect that we're working with for European manufacturers. So please be assured, we work every hour of every day with some really good people to fight for jobs for Minnesota. And I would argue that the challenging economy is more of an issue than the politics. Now, if I could ask for some help, there are two things we could do. One would be a venture capital credit. You may have seen that we lost a small company to Wisconsin because of the angel credit. And we have, Governor Plenty has been advocating that since he was in the legislature. It does take some money, but it would be helpful. We also, you have been good enough to put the Office of Science and Technology on one-time money. I've had difficulty hiring the kinds of people like Betsy and to get her some help. If we could do my best to see if I can get my boss to recommend it, but having that in the base would also be helpful. But we take very seriously the challenge to be Minnesota's Economic Development Agency. We do that with partners.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, just so you know, on the 3M and the sandpaper plant, at the same time they were building that one out in Alexandria, they were closing one on the border of my district. So I'm not sure that's a plus or a minus, but I certainly didn't appreciate the sandpaper plant in Alexandria, although somebody else might have. Yeah. You didn't answer what was a big part of my question is, what is the plan? I mean, it's like you took a 12-gauge shotgun and you loaded it up with pellets and you shot it at something and see what sticks at the wall, since you don't have, you know, the GPS is not tracking here. I mean, is there a plan? We have about 6 or 8 significant clusters in the state. What are you doing for the instrumentation? What are we doing for robotics? What are we doing for, tank manufacturing, other than the one at Hutchinson? We've got a variety of good clusters, insurance, finance, but those sectors haven't been that badly hurt. Well, they have been hurt, I should say, but there's not much that that's a big financial coming out of New York. But for our manufacturing, which really helps our rural areas, because you always want to build your manufacturing plant at the end of the farthest road that's already been built. What are we doing to help? How are we going to help these rural communities stay vital and viable?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, we have identified 14 clusters so far and have written cluster plans to assist them and done it, as I say, with many partners. We've been using an approach developed by Professor Michael Porter. I can now bring you those 14 plans and show them to you. We also have, and it's a coincidence that it's 14 regional plans that interlock with those 14 cluster plans. And the regional plans are called FIRST plans, and it stands for Framework for Integrated Regional Strategy. Some of them are 50-page documents, and they read like master's degree dissertations. Some of them are 10-page documents, and they read like outlines. We're working to get them as consistent as possible. I've been opposed to a single plan written in St. Paul for everybody, but the plan is to combine regional approaches with sector approaches, and you're absolutely right. You mentioned some critical sectors, food processing, metal manufacturing, wood products manufacturing, mining and metals, both iron and beyond. And we have pretty detailed plans, and I'll be happy to. We'll make an appointment with your office to come and share them with you.
I'd love to see that. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a couple questions. One of them is just, what can you tell us about the green jobs work that you're doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I couldn't quite hear you.
What can you tell us about the green jobs work that you're doing in conjunction with the federal stimulus or anything you might be in the state?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, one of our economic analysts, Bob Isaacson, was on the Green Jobs Task Force and represented me, and we've been doing a great deal of work in that area. And I have identified, and I'm sorry I didn't bring our green jobs work or bring him to assist me, but four or five industries in the green umbrella that we are working hard on. We are in the midst of competing for Federal Department of Labor training dollars. There's $500 million that's been put out, and those RFPs are being developed now. The Governor's Workforce Development Commission is leading that effort to compete for those dollars, along with MNSCU and others. We also, in the energy title of ARRA, there was about $183 million that came to Minnesota. The Department of Commerce is responsible for that, but they've asked our help in some job training and job implementation areas. From memory, the industry areas that we're concentrating on have been energy conservation. The least expensive form of alternative energy is conservation. And we are blessed, I didn't realize this, but Minnesota is sometimes called the window capital of the Midwest because of vendors like Viracon in Owatonna, Sage Electrochromics in Faribault, Cardinal Glass in Owatonna, Anderson in Still or Bayport, and Marvin in Warroad. And energy efficient glass is a very big opportunity. There are a couple of small solar panel manufacturers. One in Starbuck is the largest, but solar, we still need to make progress there. But energy efficiency programs, insulation, heating, and air conditioning are a big opportunity. Obviously, liquid biofuels and solid biofuels are of interest. Alternative energy such as wind and solar are of interest. Electric conservation like relamping, we've seen a number of light bulb companies emerge in Minnesota. Those are some of the areas that we're working on most diligently.
The last session we looked at trying to put some funding into photovoltaic and other sort of alternative energy, and we didn't get a very good reception with that. And in fact, I just want to say I hope that some of where this work goes is not just rural, but also in the city. We face a ridiculous effort to place high-level transmission wires from XL Energy right through one of the most populous parts of the city of Minneapolis, happens to be in my district. Unbelievable, these wires that you usually see out in rural Minnesota, they want to put it right to a mile and a half in my neighborhood. And one of the alternative suggestions last session was, first of all, to look at a different certificate of need requirement when we talk about population density versus rural. But also, what could we do in renewable energy, and what could we do in conservation? And I think these green dollars, green jobs dollars that are coming in, there'd be no better place than to look at some of those kind of issues. So I'm kind of concerned whether or not you're doing anything that's targeting the inner city, because we're getting no help with that. There's going to be something in the Central Corridor in St. Paul, but, you know, here's an example that's across the river for which we cannot get help, apparently. So I just wanted to mention that. And speaking of jobs in the inner city, you mentioned that the business that moved from Seward to rural, somewhere in rural Minnesota, and I guess the GM jobs that moved from St. Paul up to Alexandria. I'm curious about, were those in areas where they got tax breaks to do that, and some sort of special incentive to move out of the cities? Inner cities where, you know, transportation to jobs is really a difficult, is an important part of the economic development to a rural area?
Let's take them one at a time. Michael Foods had a potato processing plant in the southeastern, and I probably used the wrong neighborhood. It's referred to as SEMI, the southeastern Minneapolis industrial area. And the city of Minneapolis worked closely with them to get that land for their biotech park adjacent to University Enterprise Labs. And the project went to Chaska. And they're working on some busing, and I don't have the details, to help people who had worked for Michael Foods to take some of the new jobs. Then there would be additional jobs. There are some incentives in that program, mainly from the city of Chaska. But the city of Minneapolis was involved from day one. And they had an opportunity to see if they could accommodate Michael's needs on that site, but the site appeared more valuable to them for technology-related jobs because of University Enterprise Laboratories. But we had many meetings with Minneapolis Planning and Economic Development. I'm less knowledgeable about the 3M site on the east side. They didn't. The Port Authority was involved. We were not. And I, under the impression that the decision had been made quite some time ago to take the manufacturing off that site, and I think the Alexandria decision was separate from that. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But one comment I'd like to make. We are finding a green industry that is most suited to dense urban neighborhoods, and that's cellulosic biofuels because of the of where the waste paper comes from. There are a number of companies working to convert waste paper to biofuels, and one is looking at a location in St. Paul and one at a location adjacent to the Pine Den Refinery. And because they want the waste paper and the ultimate use of the fuel to be close together, urban neighborhoods work best for that.
And then I'm wondering, because if that's one example, I guess, and I don't know if that's going to happen, but are there other sort of green job opportunities you're pursuing in the inner city?
Madam Chair, the green jobs around weatherization, the training of weatherization inspectors, retrofitters, HVAC mechanics, heating and air conditioning mechanics, is fairly intensely in the metropolitan area because that's where the need is. And that of the $180-some million that came to the Department of Commerce, approximately $138 million is being used for weatherization. And it was distributed under formula. And I'm sure I don't know the formula, it's not in our agency, but a great amount of that. I know the St. Paul CAP agency, which Clarence Hightower now leads, got about $14 million to do weatherization in their service area. And so that's one area where green will be in Center City neighborhoods.
Commissioner.
Can I just say one final thing?
Go
I think
ahead.
I could plant a seed of another kind of a green job that was part of the task force, green job task force report, and that had to do with looking at actually urban agriculture, urban farming, urban gardens that produce food in the inner city for people who live in food deserts where there's just no good grocery stores around and that sort of thing. So I just wanted to actually think about that too, because I think D could be helpful in that. It's not just the solar panels or the wind turbines or those sort of things. It's also things that help people, do composting on a major scale, and you just mentioned the cellulosic biofuel. But I mean, there's some things that can be very more distributed and more local, I think. So maybe you could check that out. What was determined in that Green Job Task Force? It was one of the areas.
Commissioner, and before I call on Representative Anderson and Norniston, just to give us a little more idea, you know, you've got $20 million here in the green and high growth emerging jobs category that I believe you have to competitively bid on. What are you doing to be creative in that area? Because I think Representative Mahoney's question got to the heart of it. I really don't see any creativity, and if it wasn't for the stimulus money, there'd be nothing going on in this state. So what creatively are you doing to compete for that $18 million or $20 million that's out there that you got to compete with other states for to obtain it?
Mr. Chairman, we have pulled together partners and it's been led by Dr. Mulcahy at the University of Minnesota, Gail O'Kane and others from MNSCU, and then representatives of our Governor's Workforce Development Council to create a response to the proposal that is as focused as possible. You may recall we won a competitive nationwide grant called WIRED, Workforce Investment for Rural Economic Development. We're going to take what we learned from that, what the judges in Washington liked, keep the overhead low, keep the number of collaboration partners high, get as many dollars directly to people who need training as possible, and we're excited about the prospect. The law directs that the submission is made by the Governor's Workforce Development Council. We're working now to do that. As we get a proposal developed, we'd be happy to share it with you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Originally, raise my hand in response to some things that Representative Obermiller commented on. But I can't ignore some of Representative Mahoney's comments that he made earlier today. And I got to think that, you know, some of your colleagues, you know, whether it's Kalen or Olin or Ernie Leader or some of those guys out in Greater Minnesota, how they would feel about the job Z and some of the comments that you had. I think that they had would have a different picture on that program altogether than what you expressed here today. And I'm just curious as to what next session is going to look like as far as the plan that you have as being in the majority for the state and economic development, because I know one of the proposals that you had was to take away the mortgage interest tax deduction for people. And when our housing market is bad and people are unemployed, taking away a tax deduction like that is another kick in the teeth. And I'm just curious as to what kind of plans that you have as far as getting our economy going and making sure that we can keep the businesses that we at least have now in this state and not increasing the tax burden on those folks and all our job providers and the jobs that they provide. But that isn't the reason why I raised my hand. Actually, I raised my hand. I share some of the sentiment that Representative Obermiller has as far as the call centers that you have within the workforce development. For the constituents that I represent, they are fortunate in that they do have computer access at home. And for them, it's much easier to call into a call center rather than visit a workforce center and have a shorter wait time on the call line so that they get the information that they need and then can do the research at home. Now, I know that conflicts with some of the other members here today that said that they have constituents that would rather go into a workforce center because maybe they don't have access to a computer or so forth. So that's your challenge, is you have a very diverse state to work for and try to figure out what is going to try and satisfy everyone's needs across the state. But I just wanted to make that comment so that you didn't go completely the other way, too. I mean, there's a need for both means of serving constituents' needs out there.
Did you have, you want him to comment on the call?
I just wanted to give him that feedback, that's all.
And would you want me to answer your other questions, or can we do that another time?
I'm sure you'll enlighten me here, come February.
I will. Representative Garnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just be as brief as I can here, but listening to the discussion, I guess some things came to mind. First of all, in our best economic times, creating jobs is very difficult. And right now we have probably the worst of times, so it makes it even more difficult. But what the economic development director in my community tells me is he needs tools to go and find new jobs and bring opportunities to our area. You need some tools. And I think the state of Minnesota, and I'm not directing the criticism at the governor, I think it's at the legislature. We have not provided the tools needed to get the job done, at least as adequately as we should. And when you talk about Job Z, there you have a program that isn't very permanent because it's going away. It's the benefits are disappearing, and we have nothing to replace it with. So I think tools are important, and I think that the legislature should also provide the tools necessary for Commissioner McElroy and his group to function. We put a lot of pressure on them, but I think some of the pressure is on us, particularly this committee. This last year, I was working with a new business. I looked pretty good. They liked Fergus Falls. They wound up going to Fargo. I'm working with another business currently just outside of my district, employing 75 people, and it appears as though this has nothing to do with Deed, though we have a couple of state agencies that seem to be more determined to put them out of business than to keep them in the business. Again, 75 jobs here on the line. And so I think it takes a lot. It takes, first of all, I guess maybe a positive attitude, but I think it takes a lot to get to where we want to go, to keep business here and also to bring new businesses in. So how we treat them, it's like being a salesman. You have to be a good salesman, I think, to get this job done. You've got to find a prospect, work with them, smooth them, and make sure that they're happy with their final decision. So I guess my only comment is that we can't, I don't think bashing the governor does us any good. I think the state is is in a position to be competitive, but we all have to work together to get that done. And I think final comment would be taxes are still a very important part. And employers don't rush to a state that's continually talking about taxing more. I think that that's as far as I'll go.
Mr. Chairman, go ahead, Commissioner.
Representative Nornes, if you would share with us the state agencies that are causing a challenge. It isn't our responsibility, but we can often work with other agencies, particularly regulatory agencies. We most often hear that about environmental issues or environmental impact statements or those kinds of things, and some of those are in statute, but some are not, and some we can speed up. And so if you call me or send me an email, we will work with our partners. We can't afford to have our regulatory system keep us from getting jobs if it's possible. There are some areas where the basic requirements of the law are such that we may not be competitive. And sometimes if an industry does have high levels of pollution, that may be, not be a bad thing. But if they do not, and they would be responsible employers, we'll try to speed up the system if the law allows it.
I will do that, and if it's not an environmental issue.
All right.
But I'll get back to you
and let you know. Mr. Chair, I just want to correct some misinformation that I think was said. Representative Anderson, in the balance bill that we did send to the governor that was vetoed, we had the mortgage interest deduction eliminated and then replaced with a tax credit that protects middle-class homeowners. And I just wanted to be sure that that was on the record, because to say that we were going to take this from people, and that isn't the case.
Mr. Chair, but Representative Slocum, you are aware that you voted on a House bill sent out from the House that would have eliminated that tax credit, along with a host of other tax credits, from donating your organs to gifts, to liquor, to cigarettes, to a whole host of other things. The property taxes that you pay on your income, that can no longer be deducted. All of those things. So don't try and sugarcoat it. It was out there. So I certainly got all the emails on it.
Members, hold on here. We can argue about this when we get back into session. But I'm still somewhat disappointed today about looking at some of the amounts of money here and not really understanding where the money is being spent. And I wish Mr. Nelson could get in up. And I, again, Lee, I did publicly thank you for intervening on behalf and appointing someone to help the MNTAC, U.S. Steelworkers, wade through the system. But now it seems like that person may also have to help the Keewatin Taconite people at U.S. Steel wade through the system. But again, this shouldn't be happening. When I looked at these numbers from the stimulus package, whether it's the almost $18 million in WIA use dollars, which I'm glad to hear you've employed 5,000 more people than you normally would have. But looking at the dislocated worker money, $21 million, and the fact that we probably are one of the few states that has the tax, the dislocated worker tax, the workforce investment money, that we upped this year to 0.12% of payroll, which brought in, I think, after we gave money to the general fund and spent some of it on other things, about $5 million in this biennium and a little more in the next biennium. And we've got a lot of extra money that other states don't have, so we should be doing a lot more, I would think, to help. And I'm looking at all of these, so whether it's TAA and trade adjustment assistance, which a number of my constituents have been affected by, a nice chunk of money, national emergency grants. There's a lot of money coming in, Commissioner, that I don't know where it's being spent. The Wagner-Pfizer money, and again, the money that we got for UI to hire extra people to help our constituents get through the system, which it looks like most of it has gone to the call center, which is frustrating enough, and not to those individual contacts. And so, it was a little too much, and I probably, maybe we'll have to have some... another meeting here to come back to see a little more detailed how that money is being spent, but something still isn't right out there as far as your whole UI system and folks having to wait 4 to 6 weeks because there's glitches, and I'm still not satisfied with the economic development, and Representative Lornis, you know, Governor Perpich would, hearing about a job, would jump on a plane and fly to corporate headquarters, and I haven't seen that out of Governor Puente here for a couple of years. So if you've seen it, please enlighten me, because I haven't seen that. I haven't seen the governor take as active of a role in pursuing jobs for our state that I think at least my friend Rudy Perpich did. So maybe you can help me on that. And as far as your comment on taxes, I will say this. There are statistics that show during the Perpich administration, the Carlson administration, through part of the Ventura administration, when we weren't talking or, you know, arguing about tax cuts for corporations, where it showed we created a lot more jobs than under Governor Pawlenty, where he was always harping about corporate and business taxes in the state, where there have been no jobs created. And if you have facts and figures to give me that show that the governor has more jobs now than when he started, I'd be happy to look at those. But I am showing differently. So let's maybe have another hearing, because there's a lot of money here that came to deed, whether it's for unemployment insurance reasons or whether it's for economic development reasons, whether it's for training or whatever from the stimulus package, that I'm still puzzled as to why we're having some of the problems we're having and why we're not seeing the economic development activity that I think we should be seeing. Representative Carlson, I'm going to let you wrap it up as the senior member of the House.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to revert back to the economic development question, and I had another comment. The commissioner's answer was interesting, but it was anecdotal. What the real question, I think, was what the net job growth has been across the state of Minnesota. And that performance has not been anywhere close to what would be implied when you give a list of any number of specific jobs that were created. And that's fine. Those were positive outcomes. But I think underlying that question really was what has been the net job growth for the state of Minnesota. You never did share that with us, Commissioner, and maybe that can come on another day. I'd like him to put on his Minsky hat for a quick moment, though, and point out, this is where I have a comment, that under our current system, it's not as friendly as it once was relative to an unemployed worker or someone who may want to start their education. And some of our tech colleges, for example, one in particular that I can think of, you could enroll every Monday. It was very responsive. Then we went with the credit system, and then we went with the semester system. And so if you're unemployed and you want to get, as Mr. Ostrom used to say, who worked for the Minsky system and earlier the tech college, the hammer in the hand. Now if you don't enroll in a timely manner, let's say you lose your job at the midpoint in a semester, you have to wait until the next semester before you can even start. And worse yet, if it happens to be the second semester, you can even start. And worse yet, if it happens to be the second semester and you miss that start time, you may have to wait until the following fall to get into the program that you're interested in. And the point I'm making is that we did have a system at one time in place, again with your other hat on, that was more responsive. And maybe we ought to revisit some of those programs and see what could be done for a more open enrollment process on a continuing basis, so that unemployed worker can get the hammer in the hand, as one of your own employees used to say. I'll just stop there, Mr.
Chairman. Representative Carlson, you may have...
Commissioner, you can, I'll tell you what, you can come back as a member of the Board of Trustees and talk to us.
Well, the short answer to the question is that there are an increasing number of monthly start programs. Most of the community and technical colleges have adopted from half a dozen to 10 what they're calling quick start or fast start or quick step programs, and we applaud them. I'm only aware of a handful of programs where you can start every week, mainly computer technology programs, but an increasing number of monthly starts, and we're sensitive to that same issue.
That's good to hear, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner, we're going to try to get you back here, and members, thank you for coming. And Commissioner, putting on your other hat as a member of the Board of Trustees, I know that Minsky's got about $400 million in bonding requests, so I hope that you convince the governor to have at least that $1 billion bonding zone.
We'll certainly have that discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Nelson, I you come and see me after members meeting adjourned. Thank you.